This is Age of Treason Radio.
First thing I remember was asking Papa why. For there were many things I didn't know.
On the White Network.
By the hand, saying someday you'll understand. Well, I'm here to tell you now that you never mother's gone. You better learn your past, you better learn young, for someday it never comes.
With your host, Tan Stoffel.
Well, hi, everyone. This is Tan Stoffel, and I have a long series here that I'm going to start tonight, and it took a lot of soul-searching to produce this. I know it needs to be discussed, and I've been leading up to this the whole time in the installments that I've been doing up until now, laying the groundwork for this. And in some ways, it's a chicken-and-egg problem of before talking about most of the other subjects that I was talking about, it's important to define who is white and what is this white identity that I've referred to and taken for a given. But the soul searching in trying to prepare for this discussion gets to very, very deep philosophical issues. Who am I? What is important? What's my role? What's my duty? And who or what is that duty to? And these are all issues of identity. So what I'm going to do is break. I'm going to say right from the get-go here that there's no way I can cover all of the stuff that needs to be discussed in one installment or even break it into logically separate installments. But I can give the So I don't even know how many installments it will come out to in the end. But I can say that roughly speaking, I'm going to try to break it up into a discussion of identity in general first, then focus a bit on white identity specifically, the aspects of that, and then focus on Jewish identity. And I think Jewish identity is important to white identity. First of all, to contrast those two identities, just even if Jews had nothing to do with whites, but it's also important because there is conflation and confusion about the difference between whites and Jews among many whites. So that's going to be the general shape of things going forward here. I've said it before, and I'll say it again, it bears repetition. One of the important questions I think every white person should have in their head, and certainly anyone who is thinking in nationalist terms or identity terms, is who is us? And that comes first. It has to come first, too, because, you know, who is what's good for us comes next. But before you can even define what is good, you have to define who is it good for. And I think I've laid that out in previous installments. When people say, you know, we should do such and such or this and that, the question should be, we who are we talking about? And in fact, identity comes before morality. This is sort of the chicken and egg thing I was talking about, that I talked about morality first and said it had to do with identity, and I put off identity to talk about until now. But hopefully it will be clear from that previous discussion and this one that identity comes first. It's what determines what is and isn't moral. And that's independent, really, of where on the spectrum, universalist or particularist, your particular definition of morality is. Right or wrong, good or evil, depend upon who it's right or wrong for, who it's good or evil in terms of or from the point of view of. So identity, is something that this program and the network that hosts it takes for granted. This white identity in particular, we take as a given. And if you're white, by which I mean, you know, you're someone who has European heritage, and what I say is making sense to you, it makes you identify with what I'm talking about, and what I'm saying encourages you to think about this, what it means to be white, and what is whiteness, what does it all mean, what's best for whites. I think that's wonderful. That's what I'm trying to accomplish. That's what I'm trying to do here. And that's the purpose of our white network that Carolyn Yeager and I have created here. The signs, I think there's a sign of identity, and it's mainly an emotional sign. And there's this sort of progression here from the strongest sign, which is a show of empathy, which is an emotional attachment that comes from actually feeling common cause with someone. And we call that empathy. That's what the emotional expression is of identity. And that's the most basic form of it. The next, maybe lesser form is sympathy. And that's where you can maybe it's partly an act. You're playing it up, or you're playing a role, or whatever. You don't necessarily feel it in your bones like empathy implies. That's sympathy. Sympathy is simply saying, you know, it's like when Bill Clinton said, "I feel your pain." That was kind of a joke because nobody really believed him. But he was at least trying to act sympathetic. And both of these are clearly separate from signs also on the emotional spectrum of not us, of the signals and emotions that people show that indicate that they are not part of us. And that would be apathy would be the first, which is sort of a feeling of who cares, neutrality, really. You know, I just, I don't care. And if you don't care, well, you don't identify. And the next in the sequence would be apathy, which is what enemies feel for their enemies. Antipathy, to actually have negative emotions, negative feelings about someone else. So that's the spectrum there from in emotional indicators of belonging to a group or belonging to or being outside the group, and that is it ranges from empathy to sympathy to apathy to antipathy. And this is a good guide, a good ruler to have in mind when you're reading or listening to someone who's advocating a particular position on anything, not just on racial politics or white advocacy, but when they're talking about anything, who are they empathizing with? Who are they sympathizing with? Who are they acting apathetic towards or antipathetic towards? And that tells you the standpoint of the person, who they identify with and who they don't identify with. I've given the example before. I'll give it here too of, you know, the general attitude in the media towards immigration and immigrants coming to the United States, or actually immigrants coming to any white country, are treated sympathetically, if not empathetically, by a member of their own group. And the description of the immigrants' motivations are that they're looking for a better life for themselves. And meanwhile, the white natives, the indigenous population that resents this incursion into its living space, is regarded with either apathy or antipathy by the media, and you know, called all sorts of names and assumed to have all sorts of negative motives, certainly not sympathized with as just wanting a better life for themselves and their families. So who, as I've said, who is us? This is not just a question for nationality, but it's the crux of any group identity. And in my description there of the emotional spectrum of indicators, it's that's consistent for any group. It's not just racial or national groups. But here, I see the important thing, because I'm talking to white people about white identity, is I'm going to focus on ethnic, national, and racial identity and how these things are related. And so I can get into this a bit now, too. This is another spectrum that these identities, this particular type of identity of ethnic, national, racial identity, are a combination of biological and ideological, more biological than ideological, but there is an ideological component to it. And it's a combination of the two things, I think, is the important point here. The progression goes from, at the smallest element, the self, the individual. And the next beyond that is family. And the next larger grouping is clan, then tribe, ethne or nation, race, species, animal, vegetable, or mineral, and life itself. And this is like an onion. It's a larger and larger superset of all the things previously. But it's a biological progression from the very root, the self, all the way up to life itself. It's biological from one end to the other. And the strange thing about our current regime is that race is this the one forbidden element. And actually, that's not fair to say just race, because anything having to do with white ethnicity or nationality is also taboo and frowned upon and pathologized and demonized. Race is just the clearest white identified aspect of ethnic or national identity. Racism is basically a code word for white. It's things white. It's the bad things that whites do, according to non-whites. And as I say, ethnicity and nationality they're related to raciality or race. They're just smaller, deeper, inner layers of the onion, but they are close to race and close enough that it's clear that any expression of white nationality is considered almost as bad as racism. It's pretty much equated to racism, but only white nationality is or nationalism, Jewish nationalism, African nationalism, Asian nationalism are all perfectly okay with the current regime. Race is maybe the looser biological grouping than ethnic or nation is. The point I want to drive home here is that it's not a social construct. It's less of a social construct than ethnic or nation are, I think, in the sense that races are divided into nations by ideological divisions, by religion, ideological divisions like religion and customs and traditions, things that are idea-based. Language is another one. Although these ideological divisions even have their roots in biology as well. And we can see how countries like Canada, before mass immigration really stirred things up, had two really separate nations within its borders. both with the one with an English composition to it and the other with French. And that there's a lot of strife between those two groups because they are two separate nations, although they are part of the same white race. Now, as I alluded to, the one element of the onion that we're supposed to forget about, you know, everything is okay, self, family, clan, tribe, and species, and life itself, all okay to identify at any level with those things. But for some strange reason, we're not supposed to identify as a race, and particularly white people identifying as a race. Blacks, it's okay to identify as a race. They're not pathologized or demonized for doing that. But this is strange. Even if blacks were, I would say this hole in the spectrum or this the glaring exception doesn't make sense. Because there is a biological root to race and a biological nature to it. And there are things that are purely ideological. If race is supposedly something that we shouldn't believe in because it's supposedly a social construct and purely a social construct, that means it's purely ideological. But there are plenty of things that are purely ideological that aren't forbidden. Things like politics, our partisan politics, the left, right, red, blue, liberal, conservative divide that we're all encouraged to participate in, is a purely ideological, identification and, group identity. And, we have also these, supranational or, suprastate, continental geographical economic alliances, you know, the North American Union, the EU, that they're okay too. They're supposedly non-biological, and they're okay. World government itself is something we're all supposed to be striving for. Now, most people are skeptical of this and don't want it, but the leadership, the elite, is doing everything that they can to bring it about, and. The reason for this is good for the Jews. This is what they want to happen, and they're running the show to a first approximation. Everybody else who isn't a Jew or is in power is running Jewish software in their head. So, the goal is to eliminate remove white racial group identity as a possibility, to forbid it, and because it's an obstacle, it's bad for the Jews. Ironically, the Jews have a reputation as notorious nation wreckers, but at the same time, they're great empire builders, and in a sense, you need to be a nation wrecker in order to build an empire. You have to tear down the borders between nations and in order to yoke them together. And, throughout their history, Jews have participated in one empire after another, and somehow they always survive. The empire that comes eventually to crashing down, and the Jews walk away from it, and they're on to the next empire, the Babylonian, the Roman Empire, the Byzantine Empire, Muslim Spain, the Ottoman Empire, the British Empire, the Soviet Empire, and today it's the U.S. Empire, and they'll do it again. That's certainly what they're trying to do. So, back to this: who is us? Well, maybe a more fundamental question is: who determines who is us? And I think the answer to that is actually pretty simple, at least ideologically. It's us. We decide who us is. That is to say, the people who belong in a group or want to belong in a group argue about it and decide, come to a common agreement about who the group is, and then start arguing about what's best for that group. And the us is sort of an emergent property from this continuous iterative process. It has biological consequences, and it has biological limits. I mean, you can pretend that biology doesn't matter and that you're going to create a group that's purely ideological, but at some point it will fracture along biological lines, usually when there's some sort of conflict over resources or power. That's back to Lenin's who-whom observation. But this identity of a group, it can shift over time, and it's mainly the ideological nature of it that enables it to shift, because the memes are more flexible than genes, basically. Ideas can change more easily than our biology can. But as I say, over time, the ideological changes and changes in identity of who the group is will have biological consequences. You know, a good example of this is the United States itself, and how it's changed from a European, a Christian European country to, you know, open for business for everyone in the world to come to. And this will have long-term biological consequences that are bad for white people, as good as it may be for everyone else who's coming to find a better life for themselves. But I want to point out here that identity in the purely ideological sense is like any brand. It's a concept. It's a name that can be transferred. It's like the recipe for something, which I see is also related to the culture of the group. Again, some of these things, to the extent that they're rooted in biology, can't change. They resist change and ultimately won't be changed. What will change is the property, the collection of properties that it gets identified with that group is what changes. Not the group won't change to match the properties, is what I'm saying. Culture is an expression or an extension of the genes of the members of the group. And the best example of this I can think of is the spider's web or the beaver's dam. You know, not all spiders make webs, but the culture that human beings create and different groups of human beings create are analogous to the different types of webs that some spiders create, or the different types of dams that some beavers build, the different approaches and strategies that they use to build them. We can see that again in the nature of American history and what America is, American identity, and how that's changed over time. How we used to value, how Americans used to value freedom of association, and how that's disappeared, and how freedom of speech was highly valued by the founding fathers, and that's disappearing quickly. And I think that this is a natural consequence of the transition from a country that's ruled and controlled by white Christians to a country that's now ruled and controlled by Jews. Their ideal, their values are to have a multiracial nation of immigrants. That's the environment that makes them comfortable. That's the country that they want to create, and that's the country that they're creating. So a bit about language here. I want to talk probably for the last few minutes here about language. Language is important to me. I think it's important to communicating ideas. And as I have been explaining some of these concepts of these different spectrums of sympathy to antipathy and so forth, you know, language is one of my special interests, because I think it's important. I want to quote a little famous snippet here of Lewis Carroll's Through the Looking Glass. And this is the Humpty Dumpty theory of language. Humpty Dumpty is talking to Alice. And Alice says, "I don't know what you mean by glory." And Humpty Dumpty smiled contemptuously. "Of course you don't, till I tell you. I meant there's a nice knockdown argument for you." "But glory doesn't mean a nice knockdown argument," Alice objected. "When I use a word," Humpty Dumpty said in a rather scornful tone, "it means just what I choose it to mean, neither more nor less." "The question is," said Alice, "whether you can make words mean so many different things." "The question is," said Humpty Dumpty, "which is to be master? That's all." The point that Carol was made, there's a couple of points here, I think. The ones that are important to me, there's two. One is the control that we have over language, that language is a social construct. It's defined by the people who use the language. And that's sort of the positive side of this Humpty Dumpty parable. The other negative side of it is that there are some people who believe that they can dictate what the language is and do dictate. They have the power. They are the masters at dictating what language is. And this has a big effect on identity and white identity in particular, because it's not white people who are Humpty Dumpty in our discourse today. It's Jews and cultural Marxist, like their cultural Marxist allies. They've marched through our institutions and they've rewritten our dictionaries and they've redefined the lessons that our children are being taught. And they are redefining our language. They are saying what words mean. And I particularly resent the change in meanings of nationalist and identity and what these things mean in contemporary use of the terms being dictated by these Humpty Dumpties. I'm not trying to be a Humpty Dumpty here and change the fundamental meanings of words. I'm trying to put proper meanings on the words, and that's my purpose here. So I'm going to wrap up this installment. We're talking about identity, group identity, white identity in particular, why it's important, how this is related to nationalism, white nationalism. And I'm about to move into how this, the mainstream discussion of these subjects is against our interests, and it's anti-white, really. We're in an Orwellian situation, I think, where we're all equal, supposedly, but everyone is more equal than whites are, according to the current political zeitgeist. Everyone else is entitled to an identity, but not white people, and if white people try to assert an identity, they're evil. And I'm going to talk more about that the next time. So I hope you can join me. I'll see you then.